It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Last month, the U.S. House of Representatives voted to restrict the seizure of cash and property from civilians by law enforcement. According to the FBI and the Institute for Justice, police seized more property in 2014 than burglars stole. A group called Georgians for Forfeiture Reform says Georgia's laws are among the most extreme in the country. Civil forfeiture is one of those phrases that gets thrown around a lot, but it's often misunderstood. And that means it's time to break it down. Civil forfeiture is seizure of property by a government agency, usually law enforcement. It's been used since the American Revolution, and it actually helped spark the war. The British were irritated by rampant smuggling in the colonies, so they started issuing writs of assistance. As long as officials had a stated reason, they could enter someone's home or business, search anywhere they pleased, take anything they wanted, and then not worry about the damage they inflicted. Not surprisingly, the colonists weren't happy with the situation, and just like a teenager, the king had only one thing to say. So in the Bill of Rights, you see explicit language. It's in the Fourth Amendment, protecting Americans from unreasonable searches and seizures. So, for example, a police officer can't search your vehicle without probable cause. Sometimes it's clear there's good reason, like in this scene from the movie Liar Liar.
You know why I pulled you over?
Depends on how long you were following me.
Why don't we just take it from the top?
Here goes. I sped. I followed too closely. I ran a stop sign. I almost hit a Chevy. I sped some more. I failed to yield at a crosswalk. I changed lanes in the intersection. I changed lanes without signaling while running a red light and speeding!
But sometimes probable cause is a lot murkier. When the Bill of Rights was being written, the American government was plagued with piracy along its coasts and on the bounding main. And pirates were hard to deal with.
It is my intention to commandeer one of these ships, pick up a crew and Tortuga, raid, pillage, plunder, and otherwise pilfer my Weasley black guts out.
Pirates were often just the hired help. The ship's owner could be thousands of miles away, sipping Beaujolais in France and hunting grouse in the Highlands. So Congress decreed officials could seize a boat and its contents without filing criminal charges against the owner. Forfeiture laws had rarely been used since the day of the pirates, except during the Civil War and Prohibition. That's when police officers would regularly grab vehicles carrying hooch. Then came the war on drugs in the 1980s, and civil forfeiture came back with a vengeance. Here's George H.W. Bush.
And to those who say that drugs should be legalized, I say that legalization is just another word for surrender. And surrender is not in our vocabulary.
So what had changed since the day of the pirates? Using the law to take property from often innocent civilians. Let's pause for clarification here. There are two kinds of forfeiture. When someone is found guilty by a judge or jury of a crime, the government can seize anything that was used in committing that crime or was bought with illegally earned money. Think the drug dealer's Corvette or the money launderer's yacht. Civil forfeiture cases are very different. You'll often see cases called State of Texas versus Diamond Necklace or State of Georgia versus Dodge Durango. Property doesn't have rights like a human being, so actions against property can be taken on the basis of mere suspicion or probable cause with no need to prove a crime. So that's civil forfeiture at its most basic. The government taking stuff or money from one of its citizens without proving that citizen has done anything wrong. Now you get it. We're joined now by an expert in civil forfeiture. That's Robert Johnson. He's an attorney with the Institute for Justice. Hi there.
Hello.
And there has been movement on this, a little bit of victory for your camp, right?
Well, there was, yeah. In 2015, the Attorney General Holder at that point announced a policy change that was rolling back forfeiture at the federal level, instituting new protections for property owners. And then at the state level, you had 24 states that have passed reforms to state forfeiture laws, providing greater protections as well.
But there's also been a little bit of backsliding. Let me play this clip from our current U.S. Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, that he is explaining why he supports civil forfeiture.
It weakens the criminal organizations when you take their money. And it strengthens law enforcement when we can share it together and use it to further our effort against crime.
So do we have an idea of how often civil forfeiture occurs because the person's connected to a criminal organization? Because the stories that I see are about just regular citizens.
Well, we don't, and that's exactly the problem. With civil forfeiture, the government can take property from you without convicting you of anything. So we do know that, you know, of all forfeitures nationwide, about 80% of these forfeitures are civil forfeitures, meaning the government is taking the property without obtaining a criminal conviction. Only 20% are criminal forfeitures, meaning there is a criminal conviction. Now, you know, of those people, how many of them are criminals? We don't know because none of them have been convicted.
Or even charged in many cases. So let me give you an example. There's one case in which a guy had several thousand dollars in his car. He was driving to go purchase another vehicle. He was pulled over for a broken taillight. The police officer says, I suspected him of something, although there were never any charges filed. He was never convicted of any crime. The police officer took all of his money. Why is it then so difficult for that guy to ever get his money back?
Well, it's a long and drawn-out process. You have to wait, once your property has been seized, you have to wait up to 180 days for the government even to file a case in court. And then, of course, once the case has been filed, there's a series of deadlines and filings that you have to make that can take months more before you even get your case before a judge. So you're sitting around, you're waiting, and, of course, the entire time you have to pay a lawyer, and that can cost thousands of dollars. In many cases, the amount that you can that you'll pay for a lawyer will exceed the value of the property that's been seized.
So, and we also, the other half of Jeff Sessions' comment after the thing about criminal organizations was that all of this property and money seized helps law enforcement. Do we have a total number that is seized?
Well, it's grown from about $90 million in 1986 when this was first instituted to over $4.5 billion today, every year.
Until in 2015, I think we mentioned, police seized more from citizens than was stolen by burglars. So what makes it so difficult to bring about civil forfeiture reform?
Well, there's a vested interest on the part of law enforcement, because when property is seized using civil forfeiture, it actually goes to fund the very law enforcement agencies that take the property. And this is problematic for a whole number of reasons, not least of which because it creates a perverse incentive on the part of law enforcement to take property. It basically redirects law enforcement efforts from people who've from real serious criminals to the fattest financial targets. But it also creates an incentive for law enforcement to resist reform.
So in the last minute and a half that we have left, what is on the horizon? What are the best hopes for citizens should they get pulled over by a police officer who wants to take their car or their property or their money?
Well, we've seen a number of states enact reforms in recent years, and this is really happening. The biggest progress that we're seeing is at the state level, and I think that's going to continue to happen, and that will make a huge difference for the rights of property owners.
But at this point, at the federal level, we're out of luck?
Well, you know, I think Congress may get its act together, and we might see some movement there, but I think we definitely will see more movement at the state level.
Okay, that is Attorney Robert Johnson. He's with the Institute for Justice. Robert, thank you so much.
Thank you.